morning. Today is Thursday, January the 10th. Joining us this morning, Humboldt County District Attorney Maggie Fleming.
Good morning, Brian. Happy New Year to you.
Boy, that said with a twinkle in your eye. many things are going on, swirling around, but we'll see if we can centrifuge. That's what they were. High school biology?
Yes.
Right, you had a little centrifuge and sifted things out. Sounds a lot
That's
sexier
exotic.
Than sifting.
Yeah.
Yeah. Biology or home econ. Yeah,
That's
take
right.
your pick, right? All right. Why is the winning move in chess called checkmate?
I think of it sort of as a sports term where you check your opponent, you know, so I don't know.
Checkmate is used to describe the situation when one player in a game of chess has maneuvered his pieces so his opponent's king cannot move without being taken from the board. The term comes from the Arabic shamat, meaning the king is dead.
Wow.
It's almost like, makes sense, this
yes.
one.
Yeah, this one does.
So are things making sense for you in ye grand palace known as the courthouse?
Sort of. We, you know, it's interesting. It's one of those, yeah, I always give you the
solid
answer.
I see the
court
gesture is around, huh?
It's a phenomenon we see every single year, and that is that from about early November on, because of the holidays, because people aren't going to be in the office, everything gets put into January, and then we return, and somewhere around January 4th, the most incredible hit of all time. We have a million big trials. I'm warning everyone because I believe there will be thousands of jury summons going out at any moment because we have one case going right now and then we have a number of really large homicide and sexual assault cases about to start in the next few weeks. And it's going to be
Are these the ones we've been hearing about in the newscast?
Yes, sure.
So it's a relatively short turnaround. I mean,
yes.
It's not like these are from 2 or 3 years ago.
Some of them are. Okay. Some of them are finally, we hope, going to go to trial.
Why the question mark?
Because I stand in court far too often, and I'm surprised at the continuances. And it's something we battle against. But frankly, it's difficult. So we're going to keep pushing. You know, I talk to the attorneys over and over and over about, you know, we really do not see crime stop while things get continued. We have to get the cases that are going to go to trial, we have to get them out to trial because there's more coming.
Just the backlog.
The backlog. And it's particularly with the larger cases because, you know, once you say, oh, something's going to take 6 weeks to or 2 months, there's always a reason why it can't possibly go right now. And we have to just get them done.
Structurally or in the jury selection
Structurally.
Process? Okay. I mean, jury selection, I get that one. You know,
yes.
You're going to get young, you're going to get retired, you're going to, you know, that's who's available for it. Okay.
People are amazingly willing in our community to serve. You know, that's
But you're, not, you're not getting to that point.
We're not getting to that point.
Courtroom capacity, judges, or is this kind of the
Part
legal
of
maneuvering
that
we hear about but don't know too much
it's
about?
It's a little bit of everything. So we've had, you know, a number of issues. You know, just we've had 5 judges in 18 months get, you know, seated on the bench. So some of them, it's difficult because they have conflicts with their prior caseloads. And then...
And that was a concern you'd had
before,
early on because of... And I suppose it's true if you had all former electricians as judges.
Right.
Well, okay, you're just too concentrated in one field of expertise and too much knowledge.
Right.
Is that not taken into consideration when the appointments are made at
I don't think it's considered at all.
Is it more... Now, you can choose not to answer this one. Warm bodies? Who qualifies? Who wants it? Okay, yes, unless something weird pops up.
I don't know how the process is determined. I know that it's very political, you know, but the flip side is we also have some seats that go to elections. That's different. And I think that's important to recognize.
Is the lack of having a full court in the Ninth Circuit impacting anything at all, or is that so minuscule in the total load of everything that gets processed through at the county that it really isn't much of a factor?
It's not
other than the backup,
us.
The backing up thing.
Right.
for that.
Right. Because for us, the appellate process means there has to have been a conviction. So it doesn't really impact us until they make a decision. And it doesn't affect our daily, you know, how we do our jobs every day in the court.
Does it set a tenor? I think that's the right word. An overall sense or a culture through the entire legal system, though?
The Ninth Circuit situation?
Yeah.
I don't think
so. Or having judge positions that aren't filled.
So when it was our local bench that didn't have seats filled, it was huge to us. You know, because visiting judges can come in, but a lot of them are only going to be here for a week or 2 weeks while they can't do major trials. And all it takes is for you to have a one or two delay in a trial, and all of a sudden now, you know, there's a potential for a mistrial because the judge simply can't stay. He or she is expected to be at the next place they're going to be sitting as a visiting judge. So that was a huge problem for us. But once it's elsewhere, we really don't feel the impact.
What about the other folks in the court system, though? I mean, there's the judges, but there's also their support staff.
Right.
Are those folks new? Are they experiencing turnover? Is this just a time when there's inefficiencies because of lack of experience?
Not from the court staff. So when a new judge comes in, frequently it's a court clerk who's been there for decades. I mean, that's ideal because a lot of times they know.
They train the judge.
I
get that
Because there are a lot of unique, you know, this is a sentencing on a driving under the influence. There are fines and fees that have to be imposed. And that clerk has written that number down 5,000 times. So she can or he can say to the judge, Your Honor, you also have to impose this fine.
Here you go, buddy. Yeah. It's 8:19.
You love Easy Radio, singing out loud, really out loud, to your favorite songs. But what about when you're traveling out of the area? Easy Radio can be heard throughout the area on 910 AM and 104.1 FM in Curry and Del Norte counties. And if you're in Humboldt County, 980 AM. That's Easy Radio, 910 AM in Brookings, 104.1 FM in Del Norte and Curry County, and 980 AM in Humboldt County. Good radio is easy.
Good morning, KINS News and Information Times, 8:24. We're back to Talk Shop this morning with Maggie Fleming. What are some of the things that you're hearing out of Sacramento now? Maggie, I know the governor came out and said that he was in favor of spending, $300 million, or actually more than $300 million on one of his areas of concern. Are you getting anything either about the drug stuff or the mental health stuff? You know, some of those things that are impacting the courts, obviously directly when somebody, you know, loses it, but also second and third level. Also, is there any hope in that area, or is he focusing so far in other areas?
So far in other areas. It's sort of interesting how, you know, with the change in the governor, you really see the change in what are going to be their sort of items, sort of agenda issues that they really want to go after. And what we knew with our prior governor, there was a lot of criminal justice reform, a lot of issues associated with that. This governor, you know, more focus obviously on homelessness and some of those other issues, healthcare. Where I think it really overlaps and could impact the courts is specifically the drug addiction issues and then the mental health issues. And I know we've talked
positive
before.
Positive to us or setting standards
us.
With no funding?
I'm going to hope that when it becomes somebody's, you know, sort of their focus and their issue, that there will be funding made available. And I know that when the law changed, we were talking about this quite a bit, the whole mental health crisis and how it impacts the criminal justice system. So, you know, statistically nationwide and, you know, obviously it's probably higher here in Humboldt County, but they believe that about 4% of the population has serious mental illness. They also believe that about seven...
Genetic or self-induced or a combination?
Who knows? Okay,
it's a mix.
It's a mix.
Okay.
17% of jail populations someone has serious mental illness. So you can see that's I mean, literally every sheriff, you know, because they are responsible for the jails, is literally running the largest health mental institution in their county. It's just always been the way. And that's a problem. So we had legislation that significantly changed how we're to address that, but without the funding. And so here in Humboldt County, you know, these diversion programs people have spoken about statewide, we don't have the funding and the systems in place for that. So the District Attorneys Association, you know, we talk frequently about this. I just got a phone call yesterday from another rural county saying, you know, we sort of are in this position where we can't do this. We literally don't have the ability to do this. And we're looking at the same thing. Now,
so are you in like the equivalent of default? Or I mean, what happens?
We have a number of meetings, various organizations, you know, all county departments, nonprofits getting together, trying to find some solutions to this issue. But the first hurdle we have is that, and our numbers have literally tripled in less than 4 years, the number of people who are incompetent to stand trial.
Because legit. Not
necessarily legit, but the number of people are claiming, many of them are, but not necessarily all of them. And for those, we do litigate it. We ask for the hearing because we want to challenge it. But that's, so that's a huge, for those who aren't legitimately incompetent, that's a huge delay. That's one of our problem pieces. But for those who are deemed incompetent, the idea is we're supposed to send them off to Napa or some other jail-based competency treatment program somewhere until they've been regained, you know, regain their competency. Well, that takes time. And with Napa, there's a shortage of beds. So we have people at our jail who are incompetent to stand trial on really serious violent crimes. And until they've gained competency, we can't have them in the criminal justice, you know, proceeding along. I bring this up because when we talk about mental health diversion, they have to be competent to sign the forms that say, I'm going to waive time, I understand my rights, and I want to do this alternative. So it's the first hurdle that has been really difficult to sort of resolve.
So this isn't the competency hearing part. This is the actual clinical review of the individual.
It's both. So a clinical review takes place and they're either deemed competent, meaning they understand the process, can assist their lawyer, you know, recognize what's taking place, or they're deemed incompetent. If they're deemed incompetent, the proceedings at that point are actually stopped until competency has been regained.
Is there the opportunity for family members then to take, I've been thinking about it, it's jurisdiction is what the result is, but I know there's a real word for it.
Like to assume conservatorship?
Thank you very much, yes, yeah. Conservatorship of the individual. Because if somebody really is messed up,
right,
I would think that the family members would be as concerned about their safety and welfare and getting things dialed in also, and that would be beneficial for the individual, certainly beneficial for the community, and beneficial for the family.
So on really low-level crime, that might work. You know, if someone's, you know, perhaps been the problem person on the streets in the middle of the night, getting arrested because they're, you know, too intoxicated or under the influence of drugs to take care of themselves. But for the more serious violent offenders, that's not really sufficient. We can't really say, Mom, can you take him home? Because...
Well, not home, but right. Just sign off so that, okay, we don't have to worry about the mental state. Yeah, we know that there's something wrong. Let's treat it as a mental issue right now instead of holding back.
And again, the concern is, how does that impact public safety? Do we have enough facilities that we can make sure our community is safe?
KINS, News and Information Time, it's 8:30.
As a community to make Humboldt a better place to work and live? The answer is to make sure our kids are literate, able to plan financially, move forward in their education so they are better prepared to enter our workforce, and become contributing and productive members in our society, community, and economy. How do we do it? Through the Decade of Difference Initiative. Visit decadeofdifference.org and find out how you, as a parent, student, or business owner, can help. It's the Decade of Difference. Be part of it.
Good morning, KINS, News and Information Times, 836. We're back to Talk Shop this morning with Maggie Fleming. Talk Shop presented by Humboldt Termite and Pest Control, Murphy's Markets, Redec, and CDH Painting. Maggie, I saw something, I heard something a week or so ago. It was talking about demographic shifts in America. Not age, not sex, not race. Population centers. That urban, and I think urban and everybody kind of figures out, versus non-urban. So it wasn't suburban, it wasn't rural, it was big city versus everybody else. That it's almost like two separate cultures, two separate countries, if you will, and that it's the distinction between the two is really becoming quite marked, that there is, it's different. When you live in a major city, everything is different. When you live outside of a major city, everything is different. You know, for us, we would call it normal. But a lot of folks who, let's say, have grown up in, pick San Francisco, pick LA, pick Seattle, whatever, could not really function outside of that urban sprawl and activity, just as a lot of us, when we go to the city or somewhere else, get a little itchy after about 2 or 3 days. And if I had to be there for a week, I would have to do something to be able to continue to have my wits about me. Does that play into some of the challenges that the legal system is dealing with today, that there are just such differences that sometimes one size doesn't fit all and one approach can't service everyone?
I think so. And particularly, it's interesting bringing that up, looking at Humboldt County, because I started in Contra Costa County. And although we did have some rural pockets, you know, when you consider beyond Pittsburgh, there were still cattle ranchers and we had orchards. Humboldt is much more an example of the mix you're speaking of. People in Eureka have a much different sort of set of problems and issues than perhaps we have in our rural areas. One issue that I see that's really significant, and I think that this perhaps has been a historical change in our country, is very frequently rural populations are people who've been there for generations, who help each other out, who look out for each other, who are really
neighbors, community, all this stuff.
And are really aware of, that's odd. I've never seen, you know, that vehicle on this road before. Versus in the urban areas, and more we've seen this just with the change in our architecture. You know, it used to be everybody's garage was separated from their house, so you got out of your car. And in those moments where you were walking to your house, you know, you saw your neighbors, you talked to your neighbors. And now more and more people literally pull into the garage door goes down, they go into their house, and they
kind
have
like
no...
The Batcave.
Right. They have no interaction with their neighbors. And it has really changed, obviously, for us, how crime is addressed and whether or not we have the ability to prove it. I mean, I think that's part of the whole phenomenon now with everybody's getting surveillance cameras and Ring, and because you can actually get a lot of information from what's going on in your neighborhood from surveillance that you're not aware of because you're simply not sitting on your front porch or walking your neighborhood or those other. Of course, you know, I grew up in a time when most moms stayed at home during the day. My mom knew everything about what was going on in our neighborhood because she was always out front watching to see where her kids were and whether or not we were going to come in, you know, for dinner after she's told us two, three times. So they had a much stronger sense of community than I think we have now, and that has had a huge impact on our crimes and also on our ability to prove what took place.
I think that sense of community is a bedrock, you know, cornerstone, foundation, whatever you want to say, element.
Yeah.
To a healthy community.
Yes.
Or to a dysfunctional one.
Right.
I'm really would love to know more about San Francisco. Okay. Because so few people who, it seems, work there, live there. You see all the cars driving in from Santa Rosa on down. You know, and you hear the commute stories. And then going back out and the size of the infrastructure and the highway. So what's their community?
Yeah.
Is it in the car? Is it their cell phone? Well, if they're only there for a period of time and then they live an hour and a half away, okay, where they have their abode, is that their community? Because they're not there 5 days of the week. Literally, I mean, leaving at 4:30 in the morning, getting back at 8 at night, you're not really there in the community other than Saturday and Sunday, if you happen to have the weekends off. The definition of community, I think, seems to fall apart almost as much as the definition of family has changed and altered so much in the last 30 or 40 years also. When you're wrestling with this stuff, are those the issues that are more impactful to criminal justice and public safety, or is it the structural things that we were talking about before, not being able to sentence or process misdemeanors, or, you know, et cetera, et cetera, you know, all the things that we normally will talk about?
You know, I really think it is a chicken and an egg thing, because what I think back on is there was less opportunity for things to happen in neighborhoods where everybody knew each other. I mean, it's sort of that issue we hear over and over and over where people, you know, throughout our county say, I never used to have to lock my door. I grew up in a neighborhood where we did always lock our door, although the back door was always left unlocked, but that literally put you right in the kitchen, which was the control center of our household, and my mother knew who was coming through the door at any moment in time. But I do think it's really had a significant change, and it's interesting. City planners, urban planners, community planners, how they're looking at that issue. I know that friends of ours, when they purchased a home in a development, they were in Colorado, they were moving there for a job. Part of the development was literally having, although they had large homes for families and stuff, to have a certain number of single-story dwellings, the idea being to bring in retirees, to bring in elderly people, to bring in sort of the grandparents in the neighborhood who were going to be walking and talking to it. And I thought that's really, and my friend really appreciated it, the idea that she knew if her kids were out riding their bikes, there was probably a couple of people on site who were going to know what was going on. I think that's a huge idea to sort of change up how we structure our communities.
I don't know if it would hit the density issues that some of these guys talk about, but I suppose it could be done real easily because
things
have changed. I'm just wondering if, are we old dogs stuck in the rearview mirror, or are we looking at where we're headed and being able to recognize where the issues are and dealing with them proactively?
I think in some ways we're going back, too, because more and more now they're talking about the infill, having more of those apartments over the, you know, sort of one-story mom-and-pop stores, you know. And it's the people who are commuting into the city and have the hour and a half love it because now they can live downtown. It means that communities are not vacant for huge chunks of the day, which does improve not just our sense of community, but public safety.
Well, and you can see that even here.
Yes.
You know, Eureka on the weekends.
Yes.
Parking is not a concern.
Yeah.
Yeah, well, okay, downtown Eureka. KINS, News and Information Time, it's 8:44.
Hey, Humboldt County. The folks at Fly Humboldt want to say thank you for all your support. The new Los Angeles flight is a great success. The planes have been full, so book now for your holiday travel. Don't miss getting a flight home for the holidays. And just in case you haven't heard, we'll have direct flights to Denver starting June 7th. You'll only be a couple hours away from the Mile High City whenever you want to go. This makes connecting to the world even easier. Get more information at flyhumboldt.org or email us at info@flyhumboldt.org. Happy holidays.
Good morning, KINS. News and Information Times, 848. We're back to Talk Shop this morning with Maggie Fleming. Maggie, what about the infrastructure? Are we at a spot, do you see that we're going to be at a spot where in Humboldt County misdemeanors will be processed through? That the stuff that a lot of us perceive is going on, which really isn't going on, because of capacity, because of all, we'll get back. Shoplifting will carry with it some kind of an impact. Burglaries will carry something to the point where, you know, the guys that are in the know use the system and the rest of us are kind of are dealing with ignorance, I guess.
So we're constantly sort of readjusting to try to address that problem, because what everybody understands is when we had the changes, legislative changes and propositions, our jail population became predominantly people returning from prison and people being sentenced on felonies for which you could no longer go to prison.
Nastier people.
Yeah, so it completely changed our ability to say, hey, this is the third time this petty thief has been here. This is the time now we're going to have them sit out 30 days in jail. The flip side is one of the ways we're trying to cope with our high number of misdemeanors is we have this early resolution court for those people who want to come in and quickly admit responsibility. They get reduced fines. They get reduced, basically, penalties. And then the rest, you know, and that obviously takes care of about 70 to 75% of that population, the rest are going to be handled a little bit differently. But we do not really have the ability to sentence people as we did previously to jail time. So it is an ongoing problem.
Do you think Newsom is going to be in favor of building more correctional facilities or holding facilities, or is this going to be status quo for the next however long?
I think it's going to be status quo.
Oh, well. Tried to end it positive. Thanks for coming by. See everybody tomorrow.